But why are you in a laundry basket?
Well, there is no outlet in the closet that I record in, so my cord only stretches to the door of the closet, and the only thing near the door is my laundry basket, and there's so many dirty clothes in the laundry basket that it is working as a cushion for my butt.
I
So I am
mean,
sitting in a laundry basket.
I call it efficiency. So,
All right, resourceful.
yes.
There you go.
That's
That's what we'll call it.
what
I
we
am
call it.
sitting in a laundry basket in the closet recording my podcast.
Period.
We'll look back on this day and we'll be like, "Hey, look how far we have come."
Yeah, when
Ha.
we have like an actual studio with like
Yep.
not laundry basket seats, but like actual seats. Yeah,
Yep.
it'll be a good
Exactly.
day.
It will be a great day. Yeah.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on Teachers Who Talk Crime.
Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. Here we are
Yes.
again, episode 22.
Episode.
What that was. Just want to give you guys a warning. I can hear my dryer in the background. I don't know if you guys can hear it, but if you just hear some things rumbling and tumbling, just know that I wasn't being lazy on my couch all day and I was a little bit productive. So there you
But
go.
tell them what we have found and that we are now rewatching. It's nostalgic.
Oh,
Rachel,
yes.
this one's for you.
Yes. So I can't remember when we talked about this, but
On the way to
we
the airport.
at the airport.
On the way to the airport.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So when I was taking Brooke back to the airport when she came down for her last Delaware visit, we were talking about Degrassi. And I don't know about y'all, but I was a hardcore Degrassier back in my time.
Yes,
When
me too.
wheelchair Jimmy got shot,
Yep.
ciao.
I was Sean all day long. Give me Sean, baby. The bad boy. That's where I knew things would go downhill in life.
Yes. And like, so me and Brooke were like, well, where can we find it? Where can we find it? We found it. It's on HBO Max, and I've started binging it today.
Yep.
And it's just so funny to see. Because, like, episode one, like, straight out the gate, like, Emma almost got, like, kidnapped by the man in the hotel
Oh my
room because
gosh.
she was.
She was so like she we talked about that. She had like a complete glow up in Degrassi.
She really did.
Like she started out this nerd and then by the end she was like, "Tell me something."
Yeah, she was a whole thotty McThotthot, okay?
Yep. So if you guys want to binge Degrassi because it's nostalgic to your childhood, it's on HBO Max. You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. And just let us know if you start watching it. Like, we can just have watch parties or something. Just like, let us know. I don't
Yes.
have anything to do this summer other than live my best life. So
Yeah. I've almost been on summer break for a full month.
That's
And like
wild. This is
knowing that
my
I only have like
first
a
week.
month left is terrifying.
That's wild. It's really scary this break because I'm really enjoying not doing anything. Granted, I always enjoy not doing anything, but like I'm enjoying it a little too much, like to the point that like I may cry when I get the first email about like PD week and like come in, you can come in early and set up your classroom because like
Don't
I
want it.
don't.
You can have it.
I don't.
Yeah,
So that's
absolutely.
where I'm
Yep. No, I don't blame you. I do not blame you
Depression.
at all. Had a dream last night that they bumped me up to the high school, and I thought that I would be teaching like the algebra class, and they put me with the ninth graders, which were my babies last year, and they wanted me to teach geometry, and I was like freaking out in my dream.
Oh my
So please
gosh.
don't move me to the high school if you listen to this and you're from my district, because I'm not ready.
Yeah, them I would never be ready for that. They too grown.
I like my babies, my
Yeah.
little eighth grade babies,
Even though they eighth
even though they
grade
grown.
gronies. Eighth grade gronies.
Yeah, they want to be gronies. They
They
want to
do.
be.
They do. Brooke, do you want to tell them our special date that we have lined up? Tell them, tell them, tell them.
So we have a date for you guys, and we need you to mark it in your calendars, mark it in your phones, mark it as a reminder everywhere you mark things. It is a July 18th. And what are we doing on that date, you might ask? We're releasing our merch.
Yes. It's been a, I don't want to say a long time coming because we're not, our podcast isn't even a year yet, but we've gotten such great feedback from the pictures mm-hmm. we posted in our merch. So we know that you guys are excited and waiting for it. And guys, it's coming.
Yes. It's coming. It's so exciting. We know that Satan's butt crack is sitting on most states right now. Mm. We will have crew necks, even though it's hot as Hades out there. But, you know, a lounge crew neck in your house and when you do go back to school. And we're going to have a t-shirt. We're playing around with some other ideas, but those we know for sure. And we're super excited. And we really hope that y'all go rock some TTC merch.
Yes. And like she said, we know it's hot. I'm sitting here. Y'all can't see me, but I'm wearing a sweatshirt right now.
Okay. Yeah. I live in these. I'm wearing a tank, but I just got back from the gym, so.
Yeah, I literally live in these all year round, so I hope you guys do too, because I love me a good crew. I love me a good crew neck.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
It's very exciting
to see our baby, like, come to life on someone else's body.
Right?
That sounded weird, but...
Like, first we were, like, a baby. Now I feel like we're going into the toddler phases, you know? Yeah. It's just seeing our TTC baby grow up.
I know. Right before we sat down to record, a girl from my sorority... Like, I know who she was. We didn't, like, run in the same circle. But mm-hmm. when you're a part of a sorority, you know, your sisters for life. I mean, obviously, we follow each other on social. And she just DM'd me right before we started recording. She was like, hey, like, I just realized you had a podcast. And I've been binging it. And I just wanted to hype you up for a second. And you're doing awesome.
Aww.
Like, oh, my gosh. That's so kind. So.
That's great yeah. when, like, people, like, that we know are, like, supporting us. And even people don't know who support us yeah. and have been rocking with us from the beginning. Like, we really appreciate every single one of y'all because mm-hmm. we wouldn't be here without y'all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
So.
You want to hit on with that star student?
Yes. The Estrella Estudiante. Let me open my phone. Hold on. I have it ready. So.
Yes.
Y'all can never tell me nothing. I'm prepared today. Oh, no, I'm not. It closed on my phone. Oh,
just
snap.
Kidding.
I was prepared.
We love our reviews. Keep them coming. You could be our star student. Eventually, when we blow up and we like have the monies, we want to do something for our star students. But right now, we're just giving y'all that shout out.
Yes. Yes.
And okay, that post.
Here we go. So our Estrella Estudiante today is Lolin23.
Lolin23, and I
think that's how you say it. It's LOLYNN23. So Lolin, yeah. Their review is: we see it every day. ... with another 5 stars. Beep 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 beep
beep. Beep 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 beep.
And the review says: if you are not a teacher, then you just don't know. The galley gals bring you the super scoopity scoop on Kids Gone Wild. We get
love
the
it.
Shivers. This is the one that I sent you. You'll know when I say it.
Okay.
We get the shivers. We know them kids that just ain't right. And they bring those kids to your podcast. Yikes on tykes on bikes, y'all.
Yes! I love that saying.
Yikes on tykes on bikes.
Don't come for that Gucci name. That's ours.
Yes. If we can like trademark that, because I really like it. So Lolin23, if you want us to use it, like just give us the okay when we post you as our star student, okay? It says, thank you for the background research and links you provide on the cases and the time and energy you take to tell the sordid stories. Who'd have thunk this would be a pastime to get me to bedtime?
That, you know, she is not the only one to tell me that they fall asleep to our podcast.
That, you know, I've seen so many posts about it. Like, I saw one the other day about, like, hear me out. What happens if there was, like, a bar and the men were dressed up and they served us drinks and they just had true crime docs on loop in the bar? Like, I would go to that bar.
And then on intervals, you got in, like, groups and you discussed it.
I would do that. It would be like a book club for true crime docs.
Yeah. Trademark.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun. And also, mm-hmm. you know, it would be a lot of fun to play To Hunt a Killer, but they still haven't hit us up yet.
Nope.
So. Oh, one day.
I'll tag them in this.
Yeah.
Hit them back up. Answer my 3,000 emails.
And sponsor us because you know, we see you doing great things for others, and we would like to have the great things done to us too.
Mm-hmm. Yikes on tykes on bikes.
Yikes on tykes on bikes. So Lowland 23, thank you so much for your review. This gold stars for you. Bing.
Love it.
Yes, it was perfect. Perfect.
Yikes on tykes on bikes.
Yikes on tykes on bikes. I feel like when you say it, you have to say it like that.
Yep.
Yikes on tykes on bikes. Yeah.
Yep. That's it. That's the it. Caption for the post this week.
Oh my gosh, yes.
If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't.
The girls that get it, get it.
Get it. And the girls that don't.
Don't.
Young.
Yes, we got not another Brooke, but like it's weird because we're trying to get ahead of recordings this summer because we understand that once the school year starts back up, we won't have this freedom. So we've been recording 2 episodes a week. So this is our second record of the mm-hmm. week.
It is.
And Brooke is bringing you this case that she has been just panicking about, Jal. She has been panicking.
I have. I've asked people at the gym about the slander laws. I asked James about the slander laws in Alabama. I was like making sure other people have covered this case so that when they do come for us, we can be like, well, so-and-so did it.
And did you come for them? No.
Exactly.
So what, you got something against teachers, huh?
Yep.
We already poor. Leave us alone.
We ain't got nothing. Please don't sue us.
We ain't got no money. Please.
I literally think I wrote like 3 disclaimers in this script. I'm not even joking. Just to remind anyone who listens, first of all, here's my first disclaimer. Listen to the whole episode before you come for us, because Susie down the street tried to come for us and she didn't even listen to our episode.
Period. That was not Susie. She really did. That was really yikes on tykes on bikes, bro. That was like yikes on tykes on bikes.
She came for us and didn't even listen to it.
But luckily, Brooke handled it, because the way my Scorpio being is, I was ready to go.
Throw hands.
I was ready to go to town. And I was like, Brooke, you need to handle this because we're going to get canceled before we are even started.
Yes. So, if you are listening to this and you are aware of this case and you are someone who is involved in this case, please listen to the whole episode and listen to what we have to say and understand that we are doing this from a good place in our heart.
We are. We're just trying to bring knowledge. That's it. That's literally yes. our jobs.
It is.
It's to knowledge. Not, it's to knowledge. It's to it's give you to knowledge. Knowledge. It's to knowledge, y'all. Jeez. Oh, my gosh. Brooke, just say the thing because I'm tripping.
Hit him with it. Let me hit him with it. Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Pardon the interruptions. Teachers Talk Crime would like to disclose that some of the things discussed on this podcast are their opinions. Ashley and Brooke are not pointing the blame on anyone. They are just 2 teachers with a microphone. Thank you. And away we go!
So I'm kind of doing something different today, and I don't know what's up with us lately wanting to do these different type of cases. We've like, I guess, getting brave over here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring y'all something different today, and I need you to listen up because, whoa.
Oh, did you hear that? My dad, he called me. Hold on. Let me just message him because I'm on a Mac, so it comes through on the Mac when like I get phone calls and stuff now. Recording. Always bothering me. Anyway, start over.
James is probably coming upstairs with my chicken fried rice too. Okay, we'll just go with it. We'll just pause it where we need to pause.
Okay.
Let me start back. Let me run it back. So I'm bringing you something different today, and I need you guys to listen up. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to present you guys with a local case from Alabama. Another Alabama case. This took place 30 minutes from my new house in 2016. And what I want to do is present you with the crime, the details, the evidence, the assumptions, and the facts.
Okay.
And the all in betweens. And what I want you to do is to decide if you think Madison Holton committed this horrible crime, or if he was an innocent child that was bullied by the cops. So I'm going to present you the case as it was presented to me, and all the sources and the interviews and all of that. And of course, I'll link all of that. And I want you to tell me, Ashley, before I tell you what was determined,
okay,
what you think.
Okay. I'm ready.
I will give my opinion in the end, along with what actually happened. So if at any point you feel like the facts are leaning this way or that way, just give me a minute and it'll probably, in like 2 seconds, be the opposite of what you thought.
Okay.
I'm going to just provide you with all the information that I have found.
Okay.
Now, obviously, I would never leave you guys with a cliffhanger on purpose, and I will reveal, like I said, what the courts ended up deciding. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we think happened. At the end of the day, it is what the courts, the jury, the prosecutor, and the judges determined, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, here we go.
All right.
Again, disclaimer number one, I am retelling events. All the information presented is public knowledge. It is in the sources in our...
Show notes.
Show notes. And you can fact check me on anything that I say.
Okay, girl.
I want to start by saying this whole tragedy took place in exactly 11 minutes.
11 minutes?
11 minutes. Mm. That is actually the title of the Dateline episode that I actually found this case on. And it has a lot of lot more details that I'm going to be able to bring you in our short amount of time. And it also comes with pictures and interviews and all of those things that we're just not able to provide you on our podcast. So if you are interested, it is a Dateline episode on UTV. Just Google it up and you can watch that. It's also going to be linked below.
Okay.
The crime is as follows. Michael Holton and his soon-to-be ex-wife, April Holton, were found on the bedroom floor suffering from gunshot wounds that would later be fatal to them both. The question upon arrival was this a murder-suicide, or did the couple's 17-year-old son, Madison Holton, have something to do with this?
Oh, wow.
Your eyes are as big as bugs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That just way to jump right in. Okay.
I'm diving right in.
I'm about to dive in. She did, child.
I did. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Madison and his family prior to the shooting. Madison was described as a full-of-life child to April and Michael. He was not their only child, but he was their most rambunctious child. He was the one they were constantly chasing around and having to keep up with. Mm. Madison was described as a kid that was helpful, sweet, but different. In middle school, Madison was bullied and picked on for being smaller than the other kids, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that caused him to be a loner kid in middle school. So early elementary and middle school, he was kind of the loner kid as he was described by family friends. Mm-hmm. However, in high school, all that middle school nonsense was over and Madison was thriving.
Yeah.
He was now 6 feet tall.
Oh.
So no longer the small kid. Mm-hmm. And he was no longer a family boy. Because he was now popular, he had a lot of friends, according to one of Madison's friends in an interview. This friend said that Madison's only fault in school was that he was just a class clown and he talked a lot. But overall, he was a good kid in school. Mm-hmm. No troubles. However, Madison, during his senior year of high school, the year of freedom on the horizon, began hanging out with a crowd that was described as the bad kids, so to speak.
Okay.
It was then that Madison began smoking weed and partying more than he was originally, mm-hmm. As described by his friends. Okay. So what they were saying was that Madison chose a new group of friends that opened up this door for him, and he walked through that door.
Okay.
Now,
and he wasn't just like, so he wasn't like playing sports or anything. He was just with a new crowd of people who just were bad news bears.
Bad news bears, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Now, this semi-normal teen behavior, in my opinion, I mean, I feel like you are 17, 18 years old. You can see freedom on the horizon. You're about to graduate. Like, you're about to dabble in some things. Mm-hmm. You're about to push your limits, so to speak. So to me, I'm not a mom, and I'm not going to speak from a perspective of a parent. I'm going to leave that job to Ashley. But I see it as being normal teen behavior. Do you want your teenager to act like this? Absolutely not. But is this super, super, super out of character for a teen to do this at 18 years old? No.
I agree. I wasn't much of a rebellious kid, so to speak. I feel like my sister was a little bit more rebellious than I was. But like, it's a thing that everybody goes through. Everyone wants to test their boundaries. Like you said, you know, they're about to go to college. You know, you're getting away from your parents if that's what you so chose to do. And you're just kind of just testing your independence. So it's just kind of like a rite of passage, I feel like.
That's how I would describe it, too, because Mary was the rebellious child. I was not. But at the same time, and I'm going to get to all that, like parenting styles and stuff, but it is kind of quote unquote normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Even though I'm not looking forward to it, but you know.
I bring that up in a second. So, however, Michael, Madison's father, was a well-to-do in the town of Eclectic, Alabama.
Eclectic?
Eclectic.
Eclectic?
Eclectic.
Eclectic. Yep, that word. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That word right there.
Okay, cool.
Michael was a former mayor and fire chief of this small town. So as you can imagine, he had an image to uphold. He just wasn't going to stand for the fact that the town could possibly be talking about his quote-unquote bad son.
Mm-hmm.
April, Madison's mom, was also worried about Madison's new friend group. And she decided to ask her brother, Chris, a local police officer, to talk to Madison. So, Madison's uncle.
So, like, and a just let him scared straight.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Okay. And just kind of let Madison know where this type of life would lead him if you kept on. More or less, he gave him the, if you hang out with garbage, you'll soon begin smelling like garbage talk. I got that talk in high school. Yeah. Because I just wanted everyone to be rainbows and sunshine.
Yes, and you still do.
That's what James said the other day. He goes, baby, how are you so trusting of everyone?
Mm-hmm, child. I told you my story in the last episode with the church people. Child, yep, I'm shook. Yep, yep. I'm shooketh. I'm ordering one of those door jams for my door so no one can break into my apartment. Like, I'm shooketh, okay?
And I'm just like, here, come spray for bugs. I'm at home alone with just my dog that looks evil but won't do anything. Yeah.
I'm glad to know you survived the bug people. I did. That's great.
I did. They were very nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So now, at the same time that Madison was going through his rebellious phase and his I'm 18, you can't tell me anything phase, mm-hmm. Madison's parents were also going through their own hell as a couple. Mm. Michael and April were calling it quits. However, they decided to remain firm in their co-parenting when it came to Madison and his recent behaviors. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to remain as like a united front.
Yeah.
They warned him after he was caught the first time that he had one more chance or it would get bad, a.k.a. jail time.
Ooh.
The threat did not work.
Now, when you say one more time, like, what was he do? He was just hanging out and, like, smoking and, like,
Partying, smoking weed, like, yeah.
Okay.
Drinking, partying, smoking weed.
Okay, but nothing like, I mean, granted, that stuff is illegal, but, like, nothing, like, criminal.
No, nothing. I mean, besides the fact he's drinking underage and smoking marijuana, which is illegal in the state of Alabama,
mm-hmm.
nothing like
breaking and entering.
Yeah, nothing like that.
Petty theft, nothing like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, not
okay.
like that.
Okay.
Again, that's why I go back to this was semi-normal behavior. No, you don't want your 18-year-old drinking because they're not cognitive enough to not get in a car and drive home. But mm-hmm. like, it's still normal behavior.
Yeah. And I also feel like if you have that type of relationship with your parents, like, I know my parents necessarily didn't want me drinking, like, when I was 18, but, like, it was more so, like, look, if you're gonna do it, like, do it in the house and, like, don't get too crazy. And I feel like because of that, I mean, granted, I would be turned in my parents' house, but, like, I would never go anywhere. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I was always home. I was always safe because, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my parents had very similar rules as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this threat did not work. And on September 11th, 2016, Madison threw a house party at Michael's home while he was away at work. Michael received a call from a parent that informed him their child had come home from his home under the influence of something and wanted to know what's up.
Mm-hmm.
Michael lost it. He called April and informed her that she needed to be at the house when he got there, that Madison was done for.
So where was April? Now,
they don't live together. They're separated,
oh, yes,
remember?
Duh. Sorry, I forgot about that part.
Yes, they do not live together. They okay. are no longer together. But that April needed to get to the house because, like, they needed to, like, confront this issue together as the united front that they decided to be.
Mm-hmm.
They decided, like, obviously, Madison was in massive trouble. Mike, April's other brother, Chris's twin,
mm-hmm.
said, yeah. In his interview, he said Michael had all the reason in the world to be mad, embarrassed, yeah. and to punish Madison accordingly. And I kind of agree with that because Ashley, as a mom, and I can't speak on this, would you be embarrassed if another mother called you and told you something your daughters did and that people were leaving your house under the influence while you were at work trying to bust your butt.
Absolutely, I would be upset. But also, what came to my mind is if you know your son is going on this path, right? You know, like, oh, one more strike and he's essentially out. Not putting any blame on his parents, but why would you leave him alone? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's inevitable, but if like April was home, like why didn't he just go to his mom's house so he wouldn't be alone kind of thing? That's where my mind went. Like your son's already going down this like slippery slope and he's doing some things that he shouldn't be doing. So why are we leaving him alone with the expectation that he's going to do good when he kind of hasn't been doing good already?
At the time, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Now, that's a parenting strategy. I can't speak on that. I'm not a parent. I can't even say what I would do.
But I would absolutely be mortified because I would never, like, if the time came and Skylar and Arya did have a party and it was at my home and I knew there was going to be alcohol, there would be very firm rules. One, I would make sure other parents were on board. If you don't want your kid to participate, like, you don't need to come. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
But, like, car keys would be collected. It would be a whole thing. Like, it would be like, you guys can get a little lit, but not lit enough, like, that you're going to be crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I feel like, I don't want to say I'm going to be the cool mom, but, like, I feel like that's how I grew up and I turned out pretty good and I wasn't that crazy of a human being. Mm-hmm. So I feel like me taking the same approach on the girls will have similar, I mean, I hope, outcomes.
Right. Well, and I heard an interesting thing on TikTok today, and it was like, kids can't don't. And what I mean is, like, you tell kids all the time, don't do this, don't do that, but you don't tell them why. Kids can't don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to explain why.
Yeah.
And kids want to do what they're told not to do.
Exactly.
It's like embedded in them.
Exactly. It's like I literally have to explain to the girls all the time, like, more like, don't do that, like, make sure we're being safe, like, things like that. So, mm-hmm. This is, again, so they're not like, oh, mommy says no all the time. And it's just like, mommy's not saying no to be mean. She's saying, like, be safer because she wants to keep you safe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, upon entering the home, April and Michael saw all the signs of a party. They saw homemade bongs were in the house, and they even found, like, this weird box that smelled funny. I'm assuming, like, marijuana.
Yeah.
But, like, dirt marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And they found Madison. So, Michael called the police, and they sent an officer to the home. Bill Franklin, the sheriff of Elmore County, which is where Eclectic is, in his interview said that the officer sent to the house was greeted by Michael outside and was told, quote, hey, when you come in, you're going to see my son handcuffed. And also, quote, I'm trying to discipline my son. So Michael met the officer outside of the home and told the officer straight up, when you walk in, Madison's handcuffed.
Okay. I mean, because his dad's not a cop. His uncle is the cop,
his
right?
Uncles. Yes.
His uncles are cops. So I'm just... I mean, I get it, but also, like I don't know.
Right. You
know,
so
I don't know. It's a little iffy. Like,
so Bill stated, that's the sheriff of Elmore County, stated that he doesn't believe Michael was trying to harm Madison by handcuffing him. He was just trying to more or less get his attention, a scare tactic.
Yeah. Okay. So, I understand that. I can understand that. It just, I wouldn't do that. Because if you want to scare your, I feel like if you're trying to scare straight your kid, if you handcuff them, it's different. You know what I mean? You're their parent.
Right.
But if you tell the cops, like, look, he in here plastered, you know, come in and, you know, not rough him up a little bit, but put him in handcuffs so he knows, like, the consequences of his actions.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the officer walked into the home and found Madison on the couch, handcuffed with his hands behind his back. And he found April standing nearby in the home. The couple, no longer is a couple, but I'm going to refer to them as a couple. The mom and dad were at their limits and wanted to know from the officer how they could get the court system involved to punish Madison accordingly to the law.
Okay.
Now, again, I am not a parent, so I don't know everything. But what I do know is that parenthood doesn't come with a rule book.
Not at all.
So this may not be how you, Ashley, would handle it or people who are listening would handle it. But we could have someone out there that's like, actually, yeah, I get that. My child's on the verge of like losing their mind right now. I would handcuff them to get their attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I say it all the time, like with the girls, especially my bigger one. Like if there was, I mean, sometimes I'm playing, but like she gives me a very hard time. And I feel like it's because me and her are very similar. So it's like sometimes when I'm like disciplining her, like she's reacting how I would. You know right. what I mean? And it's just like, that's hard. So sometimes I'll be like, man, I wish there was a scared straight program for like toddlers. Cause I would send her. Yeah. I would send her because she needs to understand, like, girl. So well, I understand.
That's like Casey. Mary, she really wanted to try gentle parenting with Casey. And there's nothing gentle about Casey.
Do you know who is a great gentle parenter? Lugo.
Lugo.
She, yeah. When I tell you the way that she speaks to her daughter and just the, it is like, I admire that so much about mm-hmm. her because I've tried, but as a single parent, of you twins. Know, trying to do what's by myself, trying, it's hard.
Yeah.
It is very hard. So kudos to you gentle parenters out there because child, I'll be trying.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. I feel like I will try and I feel like I definitely will be the more gentler one. Between me and James, but mm-hmm. at the same day, I grew up like you said, you kind of parent the way you were parented mm-hmm. if you had a good upbringing.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a combination because like my dad was more of the strict one, and you know I can be strict with the girls at times, but my mom's also the one who's like more reassuring. So I'm kind of like a mixture of the both of them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, according to Dateline, all of this just stemmed from the fact that the couple was literally grasping at straws at this point with their son. Mm-hmm. Now, the state of the room when the officer left was calm. He claimed that no one was yelling, no one was in the midst of a huge blow-up, they mm-hmm. were not talking ugly to each other, they were just talking about possible solutions to the problem. Mm-hmm. The officer said his goodbyes and left them with a how-to on how to get a copy of the police report. And in exactly 11 minutes from the officer leaving the home, there was a 911 call and gunshots.
Oh, wow.
When the police arrived, they found both Michael and April in the master bedroom. April had been shot through her hands as if she were trying to defend herself then once in the head. She was not dead on the scene, but was clinging to life. And however, she would later pass away at the local hospital from her injuries.
Oh, my gosh.
Michael, however, was pronounced dead at the scene with one single gunshot wound to the head.
I am just...
shooketh.
Yes, like, yikes on tax on bikes.
Yeah.
Like...
11 minutes.
And I feel like
can't even go down the street in 11
minutes.
A Jodi Picoult
book called 19 Minutes, and that's one of my, like... If you haven't read it, it's a great book, but, like... 11 minutes, like there was no arguing, there was no tension, there was no drama. So like what happened in like
when
the
that
1 or
closed.
2 minutes after they left?
Yep.
Like for him to go get a gun, shoot them both, and then like who called 911? He did?
Yes. Now, we just know that they're dead. That's all we know.
Uh-huh.
So, now let's get into all the evidence. Let's get into the evidence that is against or for Madison.
Okay.
Again, disclaimer, I am presenting you with everything that I found and that the police disclosed, that interviews with friends and family disclosed, mm-hmm. that online shows, even Madison himself disclosed. Mm-hmm. So I'm bringing you everything from everyone's perspective, whether it's for or against, it doesn't matter. I'm bringing you everything. Okay. You decide the verdict. Okay. Now, the police went ahead with the homicide theory because... the pathologist said that the gunshot wound found on Michael's head from the back. I'm sorry. The gunshot wound that was found on Michael's head was actually from the back of his head. So let me just back up a little bit. Police arrived. Upon arriving, they were like, oh, this is a murder-suicide. Well, the pathologist arrived and is like, this is a homicide. Mm-hmm. Even wrote on a piece of paper, this was a homicide. Like, did his, like, classification and everything. And this was from the single shot that was on Michael's head because it was from the back of the head. Mm-hmm. This means that the gun barrel was held to the back of Michael's head, therefore ruling it on paper as a homicide.
Now, was it that close or was the trajectory of the bullet, like, the gun was on the back of his head or was there some distance between it?
It was on the back of his head.
Wow. That's some really intentional, excuse my French, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like for him to be turned away and you were just like, boom, on the back of your head, kapow, like that. That
was their first indication that it could have possibly been a murder-suicide mm-hmm. as it appeared on the scene.
Yes.
The gun, so all of this is the theories, okay? So right now you have that Madison did it mm-hmm. and that, or it was a murder-suicide. Those are your two options. And here's all the evidence. Mm-hmm. The gun was found on the bedroom floor between April and Michael.
Okay.
Okay. So the theory was that Michael shot April first in the hand as she put her hands up in a defensive motion, mm-hmm. then in the head, before turning the gun on himself.
To the back of his head, though?
Okay. I'm getting to that. Because
people don't do that.
However,
it's very uncomfortable, like, to just, like, for me, like, for one, I'm trying, like.
But is it impossible?
It's not impossible, but, like, the gun is upside down. I feel like it's very uncomfortable. Like, that's a very uncomfortable thing to do.
Okay. So y'all just heard that Ashley just attempted to reenact what I just described. Okay.
Yeah, it's just because the other way, I mean, unless you got really long arms.
Yeah.
But I, yeah.
So good. I'm glad you're reenacting it. However, Bill Franklin, the sheriff, I've mentioned him before, in his interview said, quote, "I've been in law enforcement for 39 years. I've never seen somebody try to commit suicide in such a weird and unique manner."
And okay.
This statement was given because according to the trajectory, Michael would have had to fire the gun with his left hand and hold the gun to the back of his own head. This
with
was strange
hands.
Because Michael was right-handed.
So like left hand, other hand. That is
weird.
That's weird.
Okay. Also, it is to be noted that statistically, men, when they commit suicide by gun, they use their dominant hand. Mm-hmm. So this is where the investigators officially turn their attention to the only other person in the house at the time, Madison.
So when they got there, they never assumed that he did it. It was always murder, suicide, the husband did it, and it was always that.
No. They were split. They had, from what I read and understood, when they walked in, it was like, oh, murder, suicide. That okay. was the first thought. Mm-hmm. And then immediately, it was like no time in between at all, the sheriff, Bill Franklin, like honed in on Madison and was like, three people in the house, two are now dead. What do I think?
Yeah.
Like he honed in on Madison hard.
Okay.
But granted, anyone in his shoes and you have two people dead and three people were in the home, you're going to question that third person.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. That's part of the job.
Yeah. It's common sense.
Right. Even if you did think it was a murder-suicide, even if you did think it was a homicide, no matter what you thought in the initial arriving to the scene, you mm-hmm. would question the third person.
Yes.
Okay. So Bill Franklin did hone in on Madison. Now let's switch gears and let's do a background on April and Michael, as it is relevant to the story.
Yeah.
The two met in high school and began dating. They got married right after graduation, and soon after that, they became parents of three kids, okay. Madison and two other boys. April was seen in town as supermom. She was the do-it-all mom. And her friends described her as, like, supermom, but at the end of the day, they knew that, like, that's not possible to be a supermom. But she held it together in public very well. She was always at every game, sporting event, all these things. She was awesome.
Mm-hmm. She was definitely a gentle parent.
Yeah. Michael was well-known in the town, and everyone, so it seemed, knew who he was. He earned his well-to-do title by working through the ranks as a paramedic, then a fire chief, and then soon the mayor of the town.
Oh, okay.
They were happy, by all accounts, until they weren't. April would confide in friends that Michael began speaking down to her in a tone that made April feel like she was always in the wrong and could never actually do anything right. Mm. So, in May of 2016, April called it quits, and she filed papers for divorce from Michael. Mm-hmm. Michael, according to interviews and sources, was not okay with this decision April had made without him.
I mean, if you talking down to your woman consistently, there's only so much she can take. So, of
and
course,
okay.
it's not going to be an equal partnership and divorce. Like,
absolutely not.
You know what I mean?
And kudos to the people that do have those equal divorce situations.
Yeah, because that wasn't me. I can speak from experience. I mean, it wasn't me, but also I had to, like, what am I going to do? Beg you to? No.
No,
if
we ain't begging no one.
If that's not what you want, that's not what you want. Mm-hmm. So keep it moving. So, I mean, I get him being upset about the decision, but being like, oh, we didn't discuss this. Like, sir, I shouldn't have to discuss it. I'm uncomfortable. You keep talking down to me like we didn't fall in love in high school.
Right.
And I don't like being spoken to that. And I'm pretty sure because of how she sounds, she's said this to him multiple times.
And also, you're not the same person you were in high school.
Nope.
You change. And mm-hmm. you have to fall in love with these new people that your partner becomes throughout the years.
And that's okay if you happen to not grow with them, or they change into someone that you don't necessarily like. That's okay. But like, to be like, oh, I don't like this decision, you made it without me. Like, sir, you were a part of the decision-making process because you did this.
Exactly. So it's also to be noted that at the time of the murder and the shootings, April was not speaking to Michael as, like, friends. She would speak to Michael and answer his calls when it pertained to their kids.
Yes.
But they were not, like, kikiing it up.
Mm-hmm.
She told a friend that she only answered his call that particular day because of what had been going on recently with Madison, and that they still needed to appear as a united front in this manner.
Yes.
So if he had been calling to check on the weather, she wasn't going to answer.
And she shouldn't have.
Exactly. Madison was living with his dad when his parents separated, and noted that his dad was beside himself when he found out that April had already moved on with a new boyfriend. Madison said in an interview that, quote, he like freaked out and he called her and was like going off on her about it. He went on to say, quote, it was like, I need you. I can't live without you. Stuff like that. And whenever we got back home, I had never seen my dad cry before, but he was bawling.
Oh, well. What so one Madison, man won't do, another one will.
Exactly.
Okay, let me say that one more time. What one man will not do, another one will. So you better get on, April. You better go ahead with your bad self.
So April filed the divorce papers. April had moved on. April was thriving. So keep all of that in mind.
And Michael relevant. Was not.
Michael was not. When the attention turned to Madison, so that's the background on Michael and April. And now let's get back to like Madison.
Mm-hmm.
When the attention turned to Madison, the officers were disturbed by his behavior and attitude about the deaths of his family.
Mm.
Now, this is the only part of the case where I'm going to insert my opinion, because what I don't agree with when it comes to law enforcement is that they prejudge people off of how they think people should respond to grief and death and murder.
Mm-hmm.
There is no, like, there's no rule book for parenting. There's no rule book for people's reactions to bad news.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, who was the girl doing cartwheels in the interrogation room? Jodi Arias or whatever her name was.
Oh, yeah. But she was nuts.
I mean, she was cuckoo. But they, like, honed in on the fact that she was, like, doing yoga poses and that doesn't fit the norm. Well, who are you to say what the norm is for her grieving?
Exactly. And the norm these days, like, norms for everything have changed these right. days. You know what I mean? For everything that you could think of under the sun. So if that's how she is processing it and trying to get control of her feelings, then so be it. You can't judge her saying, oh, she wasn't crying, she wasn't doing X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
That's not fair.
And that's the only part that I want to like put in my two cents, because it's not even this case. It's just as a whole, I don't agree with honing in and bringing those things to court of, oh, they weren't crying, they seemed to have it together. No, they don't. They're probably crushing inside.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the officers did hone in on that about his attitude and the deaths of his family. However, when they questioned Madison on the scene, here is what he said his story was. Madison said that it all started as soon as the police officer left the house. He said that his parents went into the bedroom and closed the door. He heard them talking, and then he heard arguing. He heard his mother yell for help. He jumped up, ran to the door of the bedroom, and kicked open the door. His dad was holding his mom in like a headlock. I wrote compromising position, but other sources said a headlock.
Mm-hmm.
And said that he knew he needed to get help, that they got into a physical altercation, and Madison then left the house and ran to his neighbor's house, where he called 911 for help. He claimed over and over again that he did not kill or hurt his parents in any way.
Okay. My question is, so you ran to the door and you kicked the joint open. You ain't try to open it. You just went Karate Kid on the door.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay, cool. Okay. All right. Because that was my first thing. Like, why aren't you like,
that was Mary's too.
And then, like, oh, snap, I need to get in there. Like, you just running up to the door like, kapow. You know what I mean? That's a little aggressive in my opinion.
That's what Mary said too. And then
that is very, that is very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So but, I'm glad you picked up on that. You're picking up on everything that should be picked up on.
Okay, good. You know, I'm good. You know, I'm a little well-versed or whatever.
Yeah. It's like we do this for fun.
You know?
Yeah. Bill Franklin, the sheriff, you're going to hear his name a lot. He just was not buying it and said that Madison just didn't seem upset and that Madison even made several comments about missing high school homecoming.
Because, like, his parents were shot?
Like, yeah, he's now being taken to interrogation and he's having to get this DNA swab and all these things. Mm-hmm. And now he's missing homecoming. And that's like something he made a comment about, apparently. And that just didn't sit well with Bill Franklin.
Yeah.
All while this was happening, April, Madison's mother, was dying in the hospital. And Madison was not given any permission or allowed to see his mother as she died. Because he was being interrogated. Yes. He was at the police station.
Mm-hmm.
During the interrogation, the officers weren't getting anywhere with Madison in their eyes. Madison's story just wasn't changing. And so they decided to bring in Madison's uncle, Chris.
The police officer.
Yes.
Okay.
I mentioned him earlier. He's the one that did that, like, hang out with garbage, smell like garbage, yeah, kind of thing. Chris said that in his interview that when he was brought in, he was still unsure on what he believed happened. Because Chris at this point had not seen any evidence, had not read any of the reports. He didn't know. He just knew Michael was dead and his sister was dying.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris did not know what to believe at the time. Madison told Chris the same story that he told investigators. His story had not changed.
Mm-hmm.
His uncle even went on to tell him that this was his only shot at telling the truth, because if his story changed at all, it was over.
Yeah.
He even offered Madison a story that matched what they had found at the scene. So he offered him a story saying that Madison shot his dad to protect his mom, who had already been shot, but that Madison did this out of protection of his mom. So gave him on a silver platter this story that he could possibly use. But Madison wasn't buying it. He was like, I didn't do this. I'm not going to say something that I didn't do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So his story remained the same.
Interesting.
He also told police that once he left to get help, he saw nothing else and that he did not hear the gunshots from the neighbor's house. Bill Franklin again was like, not buying this. He thought that Madison must have heard the gunshots even at the neighbor's house. And again, when I was presenting this case to Mary, she brought up an interesting point that she was like, well, in the event that this is true and he is freaking out and running to the neighbors, he doesn't know what he heard. Like, you don't, in that a moment of adrenaline, like,
yeah,
who are you to say how they should grieve and what they should hear?
Yeah, because you're probably granted fight or flight at that point, and you're obviously in like flight trying to get help for your mom, and you don't know. He could have went like completely just blank and just not heard anything. You know what I mean?
He's absolutely
just frantic.
So Bill Franklin, again, like, wasn't buying this theory that Madison didn't hear the gunshots. He must have heard the gunshots, blah, blah, blah. But the interrogation at the time was over. And as Madison's uncle and Bill Franklin left the room, Madison shot Bill Franklin the middle finger.
Mm.
That could mean many things. I don't know. He's also 17, so keep that in mind. Mm. He's a 17-year-old boy, like, screw you.
Okay.
You know.
I mean, that's not really a smart thing to do when you're in the interrogation room, buddy. But, you know.
Yeah. Madison also made a call a few days later in jail. And obviously these phone calls are recorded. And he called a friend where he asked that friend, quote, what are all the girls saying about this?
Not you being concerned about these girls.
He said, quote, like the people I slept with, like, what did they think about it right now? Question mark. And like, oh, damn, I effed a murderer.
That's what he said.
Yes. Now, this does not prove guilt. This would be considered circumstantial.
Yeah.
But the investigators noted it and continued to pursue charges and collect evidence.
Mm-hmm.
The investigators even decided that they would test this I didn't hear gunshots theory. But then they did this by shooting a gun in the bedroom, mm-hmm, and placing officers in places that Madison said he was, like running to the neighbors and inside the neighbor's house and on the neighbor's porch. So they placed people, you know, strategically,
mm-hmm,
in places and shot the gun off.
Well, you now, also again, don't know his hearing capacity.
Okay. And then again, like when I was discussing this with Mary, Mary said, well, these officers are told to listen for gunshots. If you're told to listen for something, you're honed in on that sound.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be a little disputable in court.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Like, put them in a chaotic situation where they are running and they are literally scared for their life. It's hard to recreate that. Like, sure, it, like you said, if there are no other variables in the test, of course you're going to hear it, but you're not taking into account all the other things that he, quote unquote, or allegedly had went through that evening. So unless mm-hmm. you're recreating the whole jaunt.
Right. You just did an experimental hearing, basically.
Yes. You didn't throw in all the other things. The fact that he was under the influence, the fact that, you know, he might have been sluggish, the fact that he was probably frantic if this story that he's claiming actually happened. So unless you can duplicate that scene to a T, there's always going to be like, what's the word?
Reasonable doubt.
Reasonable doubt, but there's another word, like just like a failed attempt. Like it's like a mm-hmm. contaminated, like a
Yeah. So 1 week after the deaths of his parents, Madison was officially charged with the murder of his parents.
Okay.
They felt like they had sufficient evidence to charge him and place him in county lockup.
Okay. Perfect. Well, not perfect, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Bill Franklin said in his interview that, like, he was not happy about locking Madison away, but told Dateline that if, quote, it walks, talks, feels, smells, and looks like a duck, it's a duck.
And okay.
I agree, but I feel, okay, no, I'm not giving my opinions. That's what I said I wouldn't do. Madison, however, in his interview said that Bill Franklin and the police department picked a fight with someone they believed was a weak-minded kid. And that they, in fact, didn't know who they were messing with. Like, Madison was ready to fight this charge. Like, he was determined that he was going to prove his innocence. Madison stated that he was smarter and tougher than they thought he was, and that he was out to prove himself, and that he did not do this. Like, he stuck to his story.
Mm-hmm.
It is also to be noted, and I hope that I haven't lost anyone with all of the circumstances in the interviews, but Madison asked for a polygraph test 3 to 4 times during his interrogation and questionings to prove his innocence, and they never gave him one.
Okay. Okay. I mean, we all know that polygraphs aren't the most reliable.
And you can't bring them to court, but they are a strategic tool that police use to try to quote-unquote crack somebody.
Yes, because they're looking for those inconsistencies.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, they can't bring this to court, but the fact that Madison even asked for one to me was notable because, and like a lot of people say on podcasts and true crime shows and all that, mm-hmm. innocent people usually don't ask for polygraphs.
Yeah. Unless you're sure or you have manipulated, but like, unless you are that smart of a human being where you can mentally monitor those things to make sure they're not skewed on a polygraph.
Right, but he's 17.
Yeah, so we don't know his IQ, so we don't know if he even has that capacity to do that.
Right. And I think that he's just middle of the road, and I'm assuming middle of the road kid, like, you know, ABC kind of kid.
Yeah.
But I, even as an innocent person, probably wouldn't ask for one because my anxiety, not even being in an interrogation room, is astronomical, and I feel like I would fail even the question, what's your name?
Oh, yeah, I would. How old are you? Oh, 5. Wrong.
Bitch, what?
Like, ma'am, what? You're an educator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be the same way. I would be the same exact way. So I would never, and also knowing what I know with listening to, like, true crime podcasts and watching true crime documentaries, I know that polygraphs, one, you can't use them in court, and one, they're not reliable. So even if there were inconsistencies, it could have just easily been my anxiety, or that I was nervous, or that mm-hmm. I was genuinely fearful that I would say the wrong thing and overthinking everything, because that's my life.
Right. And in Madison's interview, though, he, like, you know, he stated that he asked for these 3 to 4 times, but he also said the only thing that he knew about polygraphs as a 17-year-old kid was it's basically a lie detector. Like, he didn't know the ins and outs of, like, what a polygraph was, mm-hmm. but he kept asking for one because he wanted to prove his innocence.
Yeah.
Now, then there was this. So remember, I'm just bringing you everything that I found.
Mm-hmm.
The deputy that arrived at the home originally that was met by Michael, and remember, he told the deputy that when he walked in, Madison was going to be handcuffed with his hands behind his back, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the police arrived the second time to the scene, Madison was still handcuffed with his hands behind his back.
Oh.
This is why Madison kicked in the door.
Oh, okay. Well, that mm-hmm. changes things.
That's what I said. You just got to give it moment by moment with this case. Wow. However, Bill Franklin wasn't having it. He believed that Madison found the key, took the handcuffs off, committed the murders, and then handcuffed himself back.
But behind your back?
In Madison's interview later, said that this was the first time he was ever in handcuffs in his life. Like, there's no way he could have possibly done that. But the police...
in 11 minutes?
Actually, in 5. Because, I'll give you the timeline now, actually. The police tried out this theory. They placed a police officer in handcuffs behind his back. And the police officer was able to get his feet in front of his body, uncuff himself, and then recuff himself all within 5 minutes. This 5-minute window is where Madison claimed that he began hearing his parents fighting. Mm-hmm. So he was sitting on the couch, allegedly, this is his story, sitting on the couch, and 5 minutes or so of them being in the bedroom, this is where he heard his parents fight and his mom call for help. And in those, you know, what, 6 minutes was where the interaction and the running to the neighbor and the calling police happened. That's your 11-minute time frame.
So my question is now, one, is he double jointed? That's what I want to know. Because if you're double jointed, you could get your hands from behind your back or, you know, step through or do whatever. And two, did they test him for gunshot residue?
Yes, they did. So the police, first of all, you tried this theory out with a police officer?
Like, of course he's going to know how to do it.
Okay, but a 17-year-old kid that has never been in handcuffs before more likely wouldn't know how to do that.
Absolutely.
I think I've been in, like, handcuffs, like, playing around as a kid, like, when the cops came to the schools and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, I wouldn't even know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't. My dad's a retired, like, cop, and I ain't never touched no handcuffs in my life, so.
So there you go. Okay. Again, that's not my opinion. I'm just giving y'all what I know. Mm-hmm. The theory did not sit well with Madison's twin uncles. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of where they decided then and there that they would support Madison and that they didn't believe that he did it. They just thought, like, this wasn't possible with everything adding up. I would also like to discuss the evidence that was found about the gunshot residue and the DNA in the blood. Mm-hmm. Madison, when tested, had no DNA, no blood, and no gunshot residue on his body.
Oh, okay.
The investigators, however, said that this was due to the fact that it was a smaller caliber weapon.
No, I don't know much about guns.
I don't either.
But I feel like regardless of the size, it's still going to emit some type of powder. And it's not like this man changed his outfit.
No. And the thing is, there's a total of 3 gunshot wounds in the room. His mom has 2 and his dad has 1. Mm-hmm. And you mean not one droplet got on him?
Like nothing.
Nothing. Okay, so that I'm just bringing you the evidence. There was also a journal that was found in the home that belonged to Michael, the dad. There, they found a letter written by Michael to April with things like, quote, "I just can't go on knowing you are with someone else," unquote. Mm. And, quote, "It's either me or the both of us," unquote. Mm. It was this that made Madison's uncles believe the theory of Michael snapping and killing his wife before shooting himself. Now, again, this is not obviously going to be brought into the evidence part of it, but it is worth noting that the town is now dividing on what they believe happened and who they believe did what.
Yeah.
And Madison's uncle in his interview said, "My theory is I think Michael couldn't face the world knowing that he killed his wife. And the only option left for him was to end his own life." Remember, Michael's a well-to-do in the town.
Yeah.
This is all speculation. And keep in mind, I'm just giving you all the information that I found on the case and with no bias from me at the moment. Mm-hmm. It was also noted that Madison did not have a relationship with his uncles prior to the murder. So they didn't owe him anything. They did not owe him a thing. Mm-hmm. They saw each other in passing. And before this actually took place, Madison said he maybe talked to his uncles a total of 5 minutes in his life. Like, they just weren't active in their relationship with their uncles. Mm-hmm. Evidence was also found on April. Under April's fingernails was Michael's DNA.
Oh, so she was scratching him.
And it is to be noted that Michael had scratches on his face, implying Madison's theory that there was a physical altercation that took place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, here's a very interesting part as well. When they did Michael's autopsy, it was determined that Michael was under the influence of the following combination. Hydrocodone, oxycodone, and tramadol. Tramadol.
What's that?
It's also like a painkiller.
Here's my thing. You hear scolding your son. Ooh, you partying, da-da-da-da-da. Now that we know this, so now we know you're some type of, what's the word?
Pill popper.
You're some type of pill popper. So who knows? Maybe your son is observing you doing those things, which is why he is reacting the way he is reacting. Because again, he is 17 years old. He doesn't probably doesn't know how to process this in an effective way. Like your parents have been together your whole life. At 17, they get in a divorce. Now you split between households. You see your dad popping all these pills.
Yep. So according to the family, everyone that was interviewed and questioned said that, yeah, Michael had always had a drug problem. And for the most part, people just didn't talk about it.
Oh, wow.
But that it had actually gotten worse with the whole Madison thing and the divorce and April seeing someone. And they even claimed that, like, I think it was one family member that said it had just got out of hand. They believed that Michael, this is speculation. This is not hardcore evidence that you can bring into court. But family members believed that Michael was using Madison's behavior as a way to win April back. And if we're doing this together, then we're stronger and we can, you know, do all that. That's their speculation. The evidence is as follows as of now. There is DNA under April's fingernails. It is Michael's DNA. Michael was found with scratches on his face, indicating a physical altercation. There is also the journal entry. There is also the fact that Madison was still handcuffed when they arrived. However, Madison is acting strangely. Madison is asking about homecoming. There's that damning phone call from the jail. There is the possibility that Madison could have gotten out of the handcuffs. However, there is no DNA, there is no blood, and there is no gunshot residue on Madison at all.
But there was, did they test the dad for gunshot residue too?
That I don't know. I couldn't find that.
Because I feel like if they tested him and there's only gunshot residue on him, then that's sign, sealed, delivered.
I'm so sorry. I did find that out. They could not get a full fingerprint on the gun other than April's.
Huh. I wonder if they tested it for gunshot residue. Because like, okay, maybe your fingerprints weren't on the gun, but if you have gunshot residue on you, it would be an indicator that you did shoot a gun.
I agree. So there's a lot of evidence that they could bring to court. There's also all the circumstantial evidence that, like I've told y'all about, and what family members would testify to this and what family members would testify to that, and blah, blah, blah. Because obviously they would subpoena those people and they would have to come testify, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Madison was actually bonded out by his uncle and his wife in December of 2017. This is a year and 3 months from the time that he was locked up in county jail. To bond Madison out, his uncle and his wife took out a loan that they are still paying for.
Oh, wow.
To bond him out. And they took Madison back to their home. Madison was out on bond and he began preparing for trial with his uncles and his court-appointed attorney. Madison's family was worried, however, that his lawyer wouldn't be up for the task, and they actually didn't have the money to get him a high power attorney.
Yeah, because they already took out all that money for the
exactly.
loan.
Exactly. But if you are religious, this is where, quote unquote, they think God intervened. Madison began attending church while out on bond, and it was there that he met Greg Biggs. Madison and Greg had been randomly paired together by the pastor as prayer partners. Greg is a former FBI agent and a state's attorney. Greg claimed in his interview that he knew God didn't make a mistake in pairing them together, and he decided to step in and wanted to help Madison. Greg even reenacted, as Ashley did, the way that Michael shot himself. Remember, they claimed there was no way. They actually used the word in court documents, impossible, that Michael could have shot himself from the back of the head with his left hand.
I don't think it's impossible. I just think it's weird.
Uncomfortable.
It's weird because like...
Weird.
I mean, I have my left hand to the back of my head right now, and it's an uncomfortable feeling. But if I, if
yeah,
it could be done. It could be done.
Well, on television, Dateline TV, sitting in a chair, Greg demonstrated just how this could be done with an unloaded gun. And it was not impossible. Keep in mind that word impossible is what Bill Franklin wrote and stated. Mm-hmm. He used the word impossible. Now you have you, I mean, you're not a part of this case, Ashley, but you also have Greg that is like, look, I can do it. It's uncomfortable. It's weird, but I can do it.
Yeah.
So again, meeting Greg was just a plus and a bonus for Madison. I just want you guys to keep in mind the evidence part. Greg has nothing to do with the evidence. Mm-hmm. Did he reevaluate the evidence and help the court-appointed attorney? Yes. He felt like that was his place and his time to help someone in need. But the evidence is what I have told you up to this point. The people that have been quoted obviously would be subpoenaed, and they would have to testify all of this in court. You have the angle and the trajectory, the not hearing the gunshots, the reenactment of hearing the gunshots, the no DNA, the DNA on April, all these things. Now let's back up, because I do want to talk about Madison for a second as a person, and I don't want this to go into your decision. It's just something I want to do. Mm-hmm. Madison, while in jail, wrote people letters reflecting on things he may have done to them. He was essentially trying to make wrongs into rights in his life. Mm-hmm. And some of those letters were apology letters for things he might have done. Mm-hmm. For example, he wrote a friend named Hannah a letter apologizing for something he did to her in the ninth grade. And Hannah, if you want to see this letter, she did an interview reading the letter. But it basically went on to say that he did not kill his parents. He was not a killer. He was not a murderer. And he wrote a Bible verse in the end. And she firmly believes that even in the midst of this tragedy, Madison was trying to find positivity. And he felt like this was his way to do that. Now, that is the case. That's all the evidence that I have for you guys. So let's breathe. Trial was set on October 22nd of 2018. This was day one of the murder charges Madison was facing. Mm-hmm. So before I go any further, Ashley, listeners, what do you think? What's your analysis?
I don't think he did it.
Okay, what was the one piece of evidence that convinced you of that?
I feel like he was handcuffed. I feel like the handcuffing is the first thing. He was still handcuffed. It's not like he didn't have any gunshot residue on him. Like, that's something you can't wash off. And again, your hands are behind your back. So let's say in the event you were able to get out of the handcuffs, do all these things, shoot your parents, blah, blah, blah. You still can't get that gunshot residue off of you that quick. There was 11 minutes from when they left and came back. That's a lot of chaos and moving very swiftly, especially when the cops left. There was no drama. There was no tension. There was no arguments. It was just like, all right, this is the game plan we have moving forward with Madison. So all of that combined with the fact that he is just so adamant, like, just like, yo, give me a polygraph. Yo, I didn't do this. I don't think he did it.
Okay. And I mean, if you think he did, if you don't, if you think he didn't, let's just dive right into him. So in court, the attorneys were about to start their last phase of jury selection when something started happening. According to sources, people were running around the courtroom in a hurry. At the same time, others were waiting for the proceedings to start. No one knew what was happening, but it was weird. The ambiance in the room was weird. Something was happening. Mm-hmm. But what was going to happen was about to shock everyone. The district attorney walked in and announced they did not have enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to pursue the case. Mm. The pathologist that snowballed this case, ruling it a homicide, mm-hmm. stated that he could not get on the stand under oath and say with 100% certainty that this was a homicide. So after 2 years of investigating, the charges were dismissed and Madison walked out of the courtroom.
Dang.
However, this does not mean that Madison is sitting pretty, because at any point in time, the state can decide to refile the charges if more evidence comes to the light.
Yeah, because he's never went to court for it.
This case is an open case.
Dang. So he just out?
So, Madison said, quote, "From everything that I've been through, I have no doubt in my mind that the sheriff will try to put me back in jail," unquote. Madison joined the Army, graduated from high school, and is now allowing the Army to pay for college. He has even gone on to say that he wants to become a defense attorney to help other kids in situations like his.
Mm.
Madison wants people to know that he is not angry or bitter about what happened to him. He will make something of the situation he found himself in. He says that it was his faith that pulled him through, and said in an interview, quote, "I couldn't live every day being mad. I don't understand how a person could do that."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. I thank God that he kept my head on straight through the whole thing. There were times when I would ponder what happened. There were times where I felt so helpless. But then I thought about all the people that were supporting me, and that's what kept me going. Madison remained active in his church since his release and has begun repairing the relationships that were in jeopardy while he was in jail. So under the bond restrictions, Madison was not allowed to have contact with his two brothers.
Oh, wow.
So, and through all the court stuff, he wasn't allowed to have contact. Madison has said that he is allowing his brothers to reach out to him to repair the relationship, but that he wants, you know, all he wants to do is be a good brother at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Madison, as of 2022, is currently married, actively serving our country in another country. So thank you for that. And he no longer lives in Alabama, but hats off to you, because I left as well, and it was the best thing that happened to me at the time in my life. And that is the case of Madison Holton, a free man of all charges and living out his freedom the best he knows how.
Wow.
Again, I want to say, disclaimer, so that we do not get sued or harassed.
Because we're poor.
We are not accusing Madison of any wrongdoing whatsoever. This was a retelling of a story and interviews found online, along with multiple articles, which will all be linked below. All this information is public knowledge and on record. I will now say it is in my humble opinion that Madison is innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly believe that Bill Franklin and the Elmore County Police Department, certain investigators, honed in on Madison for things that were circumstantial.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I don't think he did it.
Mm-mm. I don't either.
Wow.
I think that Michael killed April and then killed himself.
That makes sense. I mean, there was the whole letter. I mean, I don't know if they did handwriting analysis. I mean, whatever. But, like, it was in his journal. And he wrote this whole letter to her saying, look, it's either me or you or the both of us, or whatever he said, you know. All that evidence is very damning. So
I think so, too. And I think that the whole reason I picked this case was to hone in on the fact that besides smoking weed and drinking at 18 years old, Madison had no trauma, had no mental illness, had no prior behavior issues, had no school-related instances. There was nothing there indicating that he would do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I also picked this case because I do feel like law enforcement, investigators, prosecutors, people of those power positions make these mistakes daily, and not everyone that was wronged comes out as strong as Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And has the outlook that Madison has. This could have gone a whole different direction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, they could have someone who is 100% innocent behind bars because they took a plea deal thinking that it was their only way out. Madison actually was offered a plea deal, and he said, I will not accept anything that says I hurt my family, because mm-hmm. I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, he was adamant about that.
And there are plenty of cases like that. That people are sitting in jail and they finally get acquitted after all those years being in jail, because they realize that, one, these people, the prosecutors, you know, had it out for them from the jump. So
yeah,
I feel like that's the situation here. Like, you didn't have enough evidence to convict this man, so you had to let him go.
And you did right
by
him.
I really don't think you're going to find that evidence.
Right. And you did right by him by dismissing the case. They could have easily gone to trial. Jury selection would have determined if Madison spent the rest of his life in jail or not. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, yes, that's our judicial system. But, like, it could have taken one juror that has been like, yep, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. I personally do not. Obviously, the courts haven't decided. But the courts felt like they didn't have enough evidence to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And with what I could find, I don't believe that Madison did this. I think that this was unfortunately an event where his father took his mother's life and then his own. And Madison has said that he does grieve. He has grieved the loss of his parents, and he does visit his mother's grave, but that he has not brought himself to visit his father's grave, which is right next to his mother's.
Dang. So he really just go to his mom like, hey, mom, what's up? And just be like, middle finger to you, dad. Like, why you did this?
I mean, it's kind of his dad's fault that he even got in that predicament in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame him. I would have been hurt, too.
Yep.
Because now he's in this situation where at any given moment they could be like, oh, well, now you're going to trial for your crimes, knowing damn well he didn't do it.
And unfortunately, this will follow Madison for the rest of his life, because Madison now, I think, has two kids, maybe. I'm not really sure. I know he has kids. He didn't. And again, in my humble opinion, Madison didn't do this. So, but at the same time, his kids growing up, someone could easily, a cousin could say something at a family reunion, mm-hmm. or, you know,
or even kids could find out at the school and then start teasing them that way. And it's just like, this is something that's always going to be like, Google his name. You're going to see him. You're going to see what he allegedly not did, but like what he was allegedly a part of, like,
accused of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he is serving our country, and I do want to leave it on a positive note. He is in our armed forces. He is out of the country serving our country. So thank you for that, Madison. And I do feel like the judicial system failed him.
Mm-hmm.
They honed in on him for throwing a party. You can't convict a kid for throwing a party.
I mean, kids have gotten convicted for worse.
Exactly.
Far worse. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen it with the Black Lives Matter movement. We've seen a ton of kids losing lives for nothing.
Yeah.
So it's a thing that happens in our country, and it sucks. And something needs to be done. What needs to be done? I don't know, but something needs to be done.
Yeah. And Bill Franklin said that as long as he was sheriff, this would remain an open case. Like, he's not letting it go.
Well, you need to sit down. Yeah. You need to sit down and chalk this as an L, because you're not. I mean, and we could be completely wrong. Madison could.
We could.
This, but we don't. Again, we don't know. But based on what you have presented today, he didn't do this.
He did not.
He was in an unfortunate situation that ended in the lives of both of his parents. And now he's stuck, like, not reaping the benefits, but he's stuck with the consequences. Like, he did it. And the evidence just does not point to him as the criminal in this case.
Right. And that's what our judicial system is based upon, is like, what evidence can you bring to the table and what argument can you present without reasonable doubt? Mm-hmm. There is plenty of reasonable doubt in this case that I've just presented.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. Wow, that is the case I have for you today.
Wow. That was I don't want to say it was a good one, because I hate saying that, because none of these cases are good. But like, It was good. It was a good as in the sense of a different outlook, like the way it was presented. So thanks for that.
And it was something different than we normally do. So that was good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Well, yeah. Okay.
The bell doesn't dismiss you, but I got chicken fried rice waiting on me. So.
And I got to get back to Degrassi. So bye.
Bye.